Greetings. I am Zach, employee of Anime News Network and defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Lindsay, my fearless friend. Fabulous secret powers were revealed to us the day we held aloft our magic swords and sang... Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. My co-host Lindsay Loveridge is here.
Hey guys,
how you doing, buddy?
Oh man, it's been a long week, but yeah. I'm ready to just roll right into that weekend.
Yeah, no shit, right? So I want to point this out before we get started here. So I went back to Star Wars: Galaxy's Edge and did the Millennium Falcon a couple more times.
Yeah.
Literally every single time I am the pilot, every single time. And this time, I intentionally went out of my way to bang that thing up as much as I could. And let me tell you, the crew that I was with, great time. Had a great time.
It was real. I wonder if there's something about you that, like, when they're handing out those little key passes, they're like, that guy... That's a pilot right there.
Something like that. Sure. No, the answer is that I'm Han Solo.
Right.
Or don't I wish? Anyway, Lindsay, have you seen any movies?
Well, I've been binge watching Netflix.
Okay.
And so I've watched one movie, an entire prestige drama TV series.
What's the show?
The show is Mindhunter. So I watched the second season of Mindhunter.
So that's good, right? Should I watch that?
So I'm one of those weirdos that's like one of those true crime junkies. There's a lot of us. And so I watched the first season, like binge watched the first season, and then they left us hanging for a year, 2 years.
Yeah, you know, it takes a long time to make something like that.
Sure,
like-
sure. Yeah, I mean. It was hard. It was a hard couple of years waiting for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You were just for me. Yeah, but
curled up next to the window, staring out into the middle distance.
Someday they're going to remember us, us Mindhunters fans. All you guys, you watch your Stranger Things, and someday, you know, they'll pass us a couple scraps and we'll get some new episodes. So they put the second season up. And for those who aren't familiar, Mindhunters is. It takes place in the 1970s in the behavioral science unit of the FBI, which is a brand new thing. And they're trying to catalog and find like a common modus operandi for serial killers, which were running rampant in the 70s. There was a lot of them. And most of the notorious ones people still know about were active during that time period. So they get a lot of... pretty interesting character actors to play these famous serial killers that they interview in prison. This season, the highlight was they got the actor from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood to come back and do Charles Manson again for longer than 15 seconds.
Hmm.
And he does a really, really good job doing the whole sort of hippie prophet, sociopath, like very manipulative, but in a way that makes you think it's your idea, or maybe he actually has a point. I came away from that segment thinking like, wow, maybe Charles Manson wasn't behind all of it. And he just got roped in by a bunch of angry people who wanted to commit murder or something to get their buddy out of prison. And then they do another interview after that. And you're like, nope.
Yeah. I was about to say, like, are you telling me that the show is attempting to get you to sympathize with Charles fucking Manson?
No, but it's doing into how he was able to talk, you know, just how he was able to talk his way out of these sort of situations, and almost seemed like he had he just had like a way with words that you question him for a second. You question him a little bit, and then no, he's just a fucking psychopath.
It's funny you brought up, like, there were a lot of serial killers in the 70s. Like, there's still a lot of serial killers. It seems like it's mostly just a difference in the way that the news is reported. Like, that kind of seems like it's a little bit more the case. I don't know.
Probably. They throw out, like, a statistic in the first season about how at any given time there's 30 or something active serial killers operating.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. And so they always have, like, the backdrop is always, like, these little short segments of BTK, who, if people are familiar with BTK, he wasn't caught until the 2000s. I think I was in high school when he was caught. So he managed to elude police for that long. And they, I don't know, they throw out little bits of information when they're trying to put some stuff together about him. That's, I don't know, I guess it's kind of dark humor funny. Like, there's a throwaway comment about, like, this guy doesn't go to church, and he would eventually be caught using a church computer. So,
a church? Wait, churches have computers now?
I get, you know, I'm sure it ran on DOS, but.
Yeah, it was a 386. Yeah.
You know. Well, that's how they caught him. I don't remember what he was doing on the computer, either sending someone gross messages or something, but they were able to track it, and then it just all went downhill for him from there. So anyway, it's an interesting show if you kind of like the psychological aspects of crime, and there's usually a couple different plot threads going at the same time. This one's set against the Atlanta child murders, which, you know, have a lot of, God, was really bungled.
I don't even know what that is.
the Atlanta child murders.
I'm not a true crime guy, so.
I wasn't familiar with this one either before the show, really. It was in Atlanta in the 70s. A guy was picking up boys, usually between the ages of, like, 8 and 14.
Hang on. Is this going to get real fucking dark? Because, like, we got to.
We can just leave it. It was really bad. There was a lot of deaths, and the police didn't do enough about it because they were black children, is pretty much. I mean,
wow.
So anyway, they end up catching a guy, but he was never charged with actually the murders of the children. They got him on two other murders of adults, and that was basically it.
Welcome to the United States of America.
Yeah, spoiler, it's still racist.
Jesus.
Okay.
You seek out intensity just like me, so it's anything else?
Things that don't have to do with murder. I watched a couple episodes of Glow, and I'm excited to be watching that show again because it's just fun 80s camp. If you watch Glow,
I don't know, but I should.
You definitely should. I think the first season is still the best. There's some really good parts of the second season, too. I'm only a couple episodes into the third, and they've already, I don't know, I'm not as interested in one of the, like, romantic relationships in the show. Mm. So I would like that to go away because I don't care. But, you know, it's 80s female wrestling, lots of gay subplots that are handled, I think, pretty well, actually. So, I mean, you can also show up for that. And, like I said, the opening sequence is great. I don't know who's behind the graphic design for that, but it's just, like, neon and awesome. It's got Alison Brie in it.
I have been told that it is weird that I don't watch Glow.
Yeah, it is weird, Zach. I don't.
Yeah.
It's 100%. It'd be 100% your bag, I think.
All right. Well, I suppose that's up next. I'm behind on some TV stuff, but I have been going to the movies a lot.
Yeah, what have you seen at the movies?
I don't want to come across as though I just love everything, but these movies are fucking good right now.
Okay.
They're fucking good. Like, you got to see the movie Good Boys, which is excellent. This is a Seth Rogen joint. He's the producer on this one. Excellently, he didn't direct it or anything, but it has if people saw the movie Long Shot from earlier this year, which was also excellent, it has the same sort of comic timing and cadence of that, and it's about three 12-year-olds who they fuck shit up, and it's really good. Like, it is so strong against concepts of toxic masculinity, like, the entire time. It's the ethos in this thing is, like, the kids talk about enthusiastic consent.
Wow.
They fuck up a frat house. at the end of the movie, the main character, like, says, "May I kiss you?" Which is so sweet. Like,
yeah,
that's so nice. Like, that's what they're going for. That's what they're going for here is, like, nah, man, men suck. So
here's some good boys.
Here's some good boys. Yeah.
I'm interested in seeing that one.
It's
as
real fucking
a
good.
Parent to a good boy.
It's also fucking hilarious. Like, yeah. Start to finish. Absolutely great. I really loved it. And then after that, I saw the film last night. I saw Ready or Not, which...
Okay, yeah, tell me about that one.
Okay.
I was already interested in, like, the costume design, like, and
here's what
also
this movie,
shotguns.
Here's what this movie is about. I was blown away. Like, okay, so this lady...
Buy a shotgun.
This lady, she comes from no money and is marrying into a wealthy family that has bizarre fucking rituals as a result of being an American wealth dynasty.
Okay.
And the American wealth dynasty has decided to hunt her for sport. So they hunt her for sport, and she fucks them up.
So it's like a twist on Dangerous Game.
A little bit, but there's also there's a Satan angle. There's a satanic angle here.
Okay.
Where it is suggested that dark powers are perhaps
involved in American capitalism.
Yes. Okay. It is, honestly, it is the darkest, deepest, most fucked up and hellacious satire I have seen in a very long time. Like, I was just beside myself. Like, this is so fucking good. You will not believe the ending. Like, the ending is
a good twist too.
It's not a twist. It's just a real fucking good ending.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad there's more movies coming out with, like, you know, like a bite to them like that.
It's also class commentary for sure. It is commentary on misogyny. It is commentary on a whole lot of things. But I love allegory. And if you're just going to make one that cuts right to it, just as direct as it could possibly be, this is your shit. This is your shit. Come here. Like, if somebody asked me, like, what movie should I see in the theaters right now? And I should just point out, there's a movie called The Lion King in theaters right now. I would say Ready or Not. Go see Ready or Not. Go see Ready or Not. Like, see that shit. You will walk out happy. Yeah. Good stuff. I can't wait. You got to see it because I'm pretty sure you would absolutely just love the shit out of it.
Yeah, I'm down. I have a slightly
take your kids.
I'm not taking my kids to either of those movies. Very funny. No, I mean, I've got a social engagement this weekend that I'm kind of stressed out about. So maybe I'll do that Saturday and then go see a double feature on Sunday to let it out, like let loose.
Yeah. Whew. It's good. So we both saw a film. Well, I suppose it's like an OVA.
Yeah, because it's an hour. So
called Invader Zim, Enter the Florpus.
we did.
Which I didn't expect to love the shit out of it, but I did. All right. So let's get into Invader Zim a little bit here. So that show is from Nickelodeon, like 20 years ago.
Don't say that because I know exactly when it came out and how old I was. So putting it in that frame of reference makes me feel especially old.
It was like 2001-ish, right? 2000-ish?
Yeah, it was.
So that show, it came out and it was expensive to make because it had a lot of CG in it. And Nickelodeon shit canned it. And then it became a giant cult hit on home video.
Yeah.
Distributed by a company called Media Blasters, which you may know from anime. and I'm pretty sure that show, the sales on those DVDs, kept Media Blasters in business for quite a long time.
I didn't know Media Blasters released those, but like I remember like one of the box sets, I think, was shaped like his house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The big box set that shaped like his house was the thing that sold crazy. It was
I had a friend who had a copy and she lent it to me.
Yeah, huge numbers. My college roommate, this is how old this is. My college roommate was completely fucking obsessed with Invader Zim. So I have seen every episode of that show over and over again.
Oh, yeah. I had a friend who was really into, like, she did fan art for it. She's really into Invader Zim and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
And so she did, you know, there's, I guess, I don't know, crossover appeal there if you're kind of into those. I don't know. Anyway, I just remember her drawing, like, fan art from that all the time. And when I watched it, you know, I repped Gaz. Gaz was my favorite character.
Oh, really?
Yeah, obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't she be your favorite character?
My favorite character is Zim.
Yeah, he's also got, you know.
But it's been a long time, and I've seen that show. I saw that show so much that, mm-hmm. like, and also it, at the time, it kind of became representative of a sort of monkey cheese type
that of absurd humor, like, yeah, absurd random humor was really popular in my friend group, and I think within, like, the anime community a lot at the time, so it kind of tapped into that, you know, just sort of like yelling random phrases or making up silly words that were just funny because of how they sound, like florpus.
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of
honestly, I thought I so it took me a little while to, like, turn this on because I was like, oh boy, Invader Zim. All right.
I thought it was going
to
be kind of cringy.
Well, like, I thought it might be nothing. It's fucking hilarious.
It's really funny. I thought it was really funny. It kind of taps into everything I remember liking about the series as a kid, while also, I don't know, not leaning too hard into it to the point where I couldn't enjoy it as an adult.
Provided you appreciate Jonan Vasquez's particular extreme cynicism,
because
it is wildly fucking cynical, like, wildly. At one point, Zim says, well, you know, I spent all this time trying to conquer humanity, and it turns out all I had to do was charge him for it.
Right.
Which is that's fucking true and dark as fuck. That is
dark.
And
that's a reoccurring thing from the series, too. Like, there's the core cast, and then any extra characters outside the core cast, like his classmates, people he encounters on the street, are always dumb fucking idiots in the show. Like, they're just, like, stuffing their face with junk food and, like, drooling on themselves and sort of, and that's consistent also with his comic books too.
The show hates people.
Yes.
Which, you know, I don't know. It's articulated in a really, really funny way. Like, I loved that, like, so Dib's father is holding a TED talk about his, basically an Apple conference about his latest gadget, and Zim takes it over and changes the gadget, and the crowd is like, boo. And then he's like, but it comes in four different colors. And they're like, yay.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, right. Boy. This is a very low opinion of.
Right. And I mean, you look at Zim's various disguises. Like, just his. Okay, so his disguise in the original series when he's going to school is just, like, he's got slick back hair and, like, caps over his eyes to make them look human, but he's still green.
Right.
And nobody bothers with, like, that doesn't bother anybody. And then when he takes over this conference, he's, like, what, in, like, some sort of weird suit, like, stuffed bear human suit.
Yeah.
And he's up there giving his speech, and everyone's,
I think it's a pig. I think it's a pig, not a bear.
Is it a pig? Okay.
Just to be extra fucking insulting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's Yeah, I was not expecting to enjoy that as much as I did, but it's real, real good. A lot of people are saying that, like, oh, they're not going to make any more after this. This is the capper. This is the end. And didn't quite feel that way to me, because they could very easily make more of that. But not necessarily that I would want it, because this seemed like, here's all of the material that I had over the last 20 years. Here's all my best jokes. Like, there's stop motion in it. There's puppets.
Oh, yeah, when they start doing the alternate reality merging thing. That was a really cool scene in general when they're like swapping through different variations of themselves.
Yeah, I did not think that the Invader Zim movie would be like, oh shit, this is like one of the best things I've seen this year. But
it's got some stellar animation in it.
I totally loved it.
Do you remember from the original TV series, did you have a favorite episode?
Okay, so the thing that I always say is your Moosey Fate.
Okay.
That's the episode I remember the most, and I quote it not irregularly. I think that is probably the one. And they had, you know, the dialogue in it is so clever. It's so funny. Like,
yeah,
like his dad is just like, what? Mini Moose is fun to say. It's good. It's good. Yeah. I also
like the part where Zim got like very depressed and just kind of turned into nachos.
Yeah.
And he's just like in the nachos and he's just like rolling around because he doesn't have a point anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, big mood.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, man. All right. Didn't think I would recommend the shit out of Invader Zim, but even if you haven't watched the show, you can enjoy the movie. So
yeah, I think the movie, the only difference I would say is I don't think the movie is quite as dark as some of the parts of the TV series. Like one of the episodes from the TV series that always stuck with me is when there's a creature that's stealing organs from the children.
I remember that one.
It was dark.
It was fucked up. Well, it's, you know, Nickelodeon didn't necessarily cancel it because the ratings were too bad. They canceled it because it was too expensive and also completely fucking inappropriate for Nickelodeon.
Yeah, so they were past their like Ren and Stimpy days at that point.
Yeah, so yeah,
that kind of shit anymore.
Which is, I'm pretty sure the original impetus for even agreeing to make that in the first place. But no, it's good. It's good stuff. So anything else movie wise?
No. No, it was pretty much just serial killers and Invader Zim for me.
All right. Well, sounds good. So before we get to the news, I just wanted to bring up this manga that I read, which I've talked about on the show before, Our Dreams at Dusk.
Right.
Which is volume 2. I really think that people should seek this out. It is a flawless representation of complicated queer feelings.
Yeah.
And is one of the best things I've ever read. It is hitting me real, real, real hard. So if you see it out there in the wild, if you're at a bookstore, get those two volumes. You will not regret it.
I also read a book this week too that finally came in. It got pushed back a while, and I also think people should seek it out too. It also happens to be gay, but it has vampires.
What's that? Twilight?
No, although there is a manga adaptation by Tokyopop if you want to find that.
I know.
But I was going to talk about The Clan of Poe, which is by Moto Hagio.
It is
classic. Moto Hagio is kind of irreplaceable as far as her contributions to manga. And this one is about a village full of vampires that they drink blood through touch, though, not necessarily through biting. And one of the boys, Edgar, of course, his name is Edgar. He ends up going to an all boys school. I haven't finished reading it yet. It's a pretty hefty volume, but he starts going to an all boys school and one of his classmates becomes suspicious that he might be a vampire or also is just lovely and in love with him. If you like classic shoujo and that sort of aesthetic, that's not really around anymore. Like manga's not drawn this way anymore.
Right.
Definitely grab it. Takes place in Europe. So it's got that old world aesthetic, sort of romanticism to it. Also, if you read The Heart of Thomas, this is the same as The Heart of Thomas, which is also excellent. So,
yeah,
that's just my rec for the week.
Sounds good.
Yeah,
that sounds good. I'm gonna have to check that shit out. Lindsay, what's in the news?
All right, so in the news this week, let's see. We've got some heavy stuff. We got some not so heavy stuff. I'll start with not heavy stuff. There's some new footage from Hideo Kojima's Death Stranding game, starring who's in that? Zach? Who's the actor? Norman, the
name of the game is Norman Reedus and the Funky Fetus, I believe.
Right. Okay. And Guillermo del Toro, I think, and also unofficial boyfriend Mads Mikkelsen, I think, are all in this.
Oh, really? Mads? Really? All right.
Yeah.
What a shocker that is. Gee, Lindsay, did you like Hannibal?
Shut up, Zach. I wasn't talking about my boyfriend. I'm just him and Hideo Kojima hang out all the time. And there's like some meme images of how they're like Victor and
Yuri
or whatever. But sure, yes, also I watched Hannibal.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What a stunner that is.
So the interesting point from the new footage is that you can make Norman Reedus pee on stuff and it might actually be important to the game.
Yeah, sure.
Yep, he pees on things and mushrooms grow out of the ground when he does so. And Kojima has hinted that if, I don't know, enough people pee on the same spot at the same time, something might happen.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. I don't know.
I don't know
what anything about this game means.
Are you familiar with the sort of artist that Hideo Kojima is? Because he makes weird shit.
I mean, I've watched someone play most of the Snake games.
Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, that made me sound like someone's mom, didn't it?
The snake ones. Yeah.
The guy, he has an eye patch.
Yeah, well.
He eats Calorie Mate, you know, that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Those games are very strange. And this is his first non-Metal Gear thing in quite a while. And he's no longer shackled by Metal Gear. So he can just make whatever the fuck he wants. And so I am thrilled that it's going to be this fucking weird.
Yeah.
Bring it. Put it in my face. I'll take it. Like,
yeah. If you stream playing that, I'll watch you play it and edit it.
So to speak, right? I'll stream it. Yeah, no, that shit's going to be probably unbelievable, and I can't wait to see it. I love, like, people get, I don't know, the internet likes to overreact to shit, so whatever, but who wouldn't want a weird-ass video game? Like, okay, I'll take it. Like,
yeah.
You know? Plus, it's by this guy, and he rules, so his art really is incredible.
I would have played the fuck out of his Silent Hills game. I've played all of those, even the ones that aren't good.
Wait, which ones aren't good? Not to tangent too much here, but which ones aren't good?
There's I was going to say the one with the guy and the cop, but that doesn't mean anything to anybody.
Well, most people, they'll point to like the Wii one as being kind of like not the good one.
Yeah.
But then like, I mean, everyone talks about
it. Everyone loves two,
yeah,
right?
That's exactly.
And I mean, I liked three well enough. I don't know if that's
three. I feel like three had like kind of a, it's getting kind of a second life as maybe a little bit more of a cult hit. Like,
yeah,
you know, actually this was pretty good. That's what I've been hearing lately anyway. But yeah, no.
This wasn't a Silent Hill game. Maybe this was another horror one. There's one where you're in an apartment.
That's Silent Hill 4, The Room. Right?
Yeah, The Room. I thought that one was
starring.
Okay.
Yeah. It mixed reviews, I think.
Mixed reviews. I mean, you're stuck in a room and there's a weird bunny doll on the other side of it. Anyway, I would have totally played Hideo Kojima's. I didn't get to play the trailer before it was pulled, so I've just had to watch people play it. But he was going to work with Junji Ito on that.
Would have been good.
Would have been real good.
That would have been good. But I mean, honestly, like, Kojima could do anything, and I would be like, I'm there. Yep, all right. What you got this time, buddy boy? Like, yeah, exactly. What is a singular talent, and the shit that he makes is exciting because it's weird. I'm excited about that one. The fact that the peeing thing is like, I'm like, of course. All right.
Sure. I appreciate that he also took in consideration that you can't do a forward camera view. He's like, yeah, you can pee, but you can't see his dick.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and bet that at one point he asked Norman Reedus, are you okay with your dick being in this video game? And Norman Reedus was like, Look, I want to say yes to everything, but...
You found my line.
Yeah. Gotta have some boundaries, pal. Just some boundaries. Yeah. Anyway.
Let's see. What else we got?
What else is going on?
Shinkai has knocked it out of the park again.
Once more.
Yeah. He's his Weathering With You film has now earned almost $100 million. And it is now number 10 in the highest earning Japanese films of all time.
Boy, what a huge difference between the American and Japanese film industries, because it's been out for like a month and a half or something, like a month?
Yeah, 34 days.
Yeah, and it almost is at 100 million. But if a movie over here opens up at less than that, it's considered like a failure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm excited to see it. I have this feeling that it's just not going to be as good as Your Name.
Well, sure. Now, I
loved Your Name. I loved it. I think it's really, really good. And people who complain about that movie, to me, it's like people who complain about like the Beatles. Like, okay. Oh, I hate the Beatles. Like, all right. Yeah. I don't even own a TV. You know, that kind of thing. Like, come on. It's like a really well-composed pop song. You know, like. Yeah. That's kind of what Your Name is like. And it's also like thematically rich. Like there's a lot in there. Like it's very, very, very good. Thing is, it's really hard to do that again.
Right.
So like
I hope you just got like a sigh of relief at this point. Like even if it didn't have to beat Your Name, I felt like it just had to not be mediocre, and he's done that. So maybe that relieves some pressure creatively.
It didn't have to just so long as it wasn't only at the Shinjuku Prince cinema for 2 weeks before getting shut out, like,
right,
then he did good. So yeah. Well, anyway, good for Comics Wave, man. They've been you know, it's a hot streak. I'm very, very excited to see it. It'll come out here pretty soon, I think.
Yeah, but I think they have
G-Kids. I think G-Kids is doing that one.
Probably.
Maybe we should have checked before this, recording.
But yeah, probably. It's going to be in Toronto for TIFF.
All right.
In September, and then it'll probably open. It is G-Kids, and it'll probably have a wider release after that.
But, well, we already have a review of it on a site called Anime News Network, so if you want an opinion...
I think Kim Morrissey did that for us.
If you want an opinion on it, it's already there. There you go. what else is going on?
Let's see. We had a real big piece go up about Anime Revolution Convention.
Okay. All right.
It's a long read. But I think the content, the stories, they're real important. If you can make the time to read it, I guess if I was going to summarize it real briefly, the Anime Revolution Convention happened, not this last weekend, but the weekend before. And there was a lot of upset attendees for a multitude of reasons. But one of them was, due to two men who were attending that have a reputation within the community, and inevitably, as we found out, a series of jump in for me here, Zach. I'm trying to like word this in the least concerning way. They have a history of serial harassment, and
I'm not jumping in here for you.
You're like, all right, no, Lindsay, no. All right.
I listened to the audio you sent me, man. That was like almost.
Yeah, I did. And I will be thankful for that for a real long time, because that was a lot.
Jesus. Yeah. So basically what you have is a serial harasser who blamed his serial harassment on having Asperger's disease.
Right.
You know, autistic. Which
and that was
so
upset a lot
up.
Of people too, because it was cited in an official statement by the Anime Revolution staff, and of course there's tons of people on various levels of the spectrum that leave fulfilling lives and don't hurt anyone ever. So that did not jive as an excuse for a person to harass and target mostly underage, you know, girls between the ages of like 13 Ugh. To 17. Yeah. Yeah. That's a normal reaction. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really important to drum these fucking people out. Get the fuck out. Go home. Yeah. Go home. Get the fuck out. Get help. Like, I read your story and I listened to the audio, and it is deeply fucking upsetting, but it's also important work. Very important work that you're doing with that stuff. So
thank you. I think if what I want people to take away from it, I mean, other than, you know, solidarity with the victims that came forward, which was very, you know, I'm sure very harrowing to retell these stories in a public manner. But to also, if you're involved in an event management in any kind of way, you know, rethink how your harassment policy works, prep your staff for these sorts of scenarios and how to handle them, and make sure that everyone knows, you know, exactly what to do when these sorts of situations arise. Otherwise, you get, for lack of a better term, a giant clusterfuck when, you know, your attendees aren't safe. And that should be the most important thing when they're there. They should be able to enjoy fandom with their friends, go to panels, participate in events, do cosplay, you know, sell stuff at the artist alley, all those sorts of things without being scared. So, you know, read these testimonies. Think about, you know, if you're part of a club or an event, or going to go to an event and find that it's inadequate, you know, you can sort of prepare yourself, I guess, for what you need to do to make these events better, or what you want from your own event that you're planning.
Admittedly, like, you know, these cons are largely run by volunteers.
That's true.
Don't necessarily have great attitudes about exactly how to handle this sort of thing, you know, and there's no way you can't have, like, you know, you could monitor it and say, like, okay, if you have a criminal record, you cannot come into this show specifically. But that also, you know, that's also problematic, right? Like, that's also
problematic, and it's a logistical nightmare.
And it's a logistical, and no one's getting
screen everyone who buys a badge.
Screening everyone who buys a badge, and you're not getting paid for this. Okay, you know, like, yeah, it's a complicated issue. So I don't necessarily blame the convention for not, I mean, in this situation, it was obvious that they had made the wrong choice, but I don't necessarily blame them for not being able to prevent, to constantly be able to flawlessly prevent this sort of thing from happening.
Right.
But it is more important to just take responsibility for it afterward and then learn from it. And then change your policies.
Right. Prevention's ideal, but
it's not perfect.
It's never going to be perfect. It's more about having a good chain of a good process for when someone comes forward to you. They come to your security services or another staff member, and that staff member knows what to do when someone tells them, so-and-so has been following me for the last 2 days and I don't feel safe, or I don't know how to get rid of him or her. You know, it's knowing how to quickly handle those situations when they do come up, because
we are also talking about what would require a sort of massive cultural shift in the way conventions are. Mm-hmm. Conventions, if your convention already has a policy in place and has had a policy in place of basically like fucking no means no, no means no. Mm-hmm. How effective would even that be? Like, don't be a predator. How effective would that be? Like,
right.
It's like, that's not going to work. Like, how do you even solve the problem? I don't know. I'm not an expert, but like, the culture, I think, has to change on a large scale. Like, it really has to change.
Yeah, I think the hard part is a lot of these smaller conventions, you know, they crop up as fan events. It's a group of people who just enjoy the content and then want to make something where more people show up and also enjoy the content. They don't necessarily have experience in event management or anything that goes into a large scale production like a convention. And I think part of the cultural shift is realizing that if you want to run a con, it is actually a very large responsibility. It's not just you and your friends
having a party, having
anymore.
A nerd party. Yeah.
Having a nerd party.
It's not
party
you
anymore.
And your friends having a nerd party. If you're responsible for 10,000 fucking people, you grow up a little bit maybe and think about this stuff. Cause that was uncomfortable. But good on you for putting in the hard work, man. It's hard work.
Yeah.
That is tough stuff. You know, it's tough stuff to deal with.
And it's been 9 months, more or less, at this point of various levels.
Time for a break.
Time for a break. You know what? Time for a break. Why don't we talk about the new Netflix original anime, He-Man.
Are you talking about
Masters of the Universe?
You're talking about
Revelation by Kevin Smith.
You're talking about He-Man, Masters of the Universe. Now, Lindsay.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know how much He-Man means to me.
I have.
You're like, I have
inkling.
Some idea.
I have an inkling that He-Man, yeah.
First, I just want to say, there is no fucking way that Kevin Smith is going to be able to recreate the energy of He-Man. And if you really want to read about that show, there are many, many, many good books about it. One of them that I would recommend is the biography of Lou Scheimer, who is the producer on the original, called Creating the Filmation Generation. It's a very good book. And Dark Horse put out a bunch of He-Man books that covered the whole thing. Now, He-Man, as a cartoon, is pretty much riotously gay the entire time.
And it's just camp up and down, isn't
campy,
it?
Campy, low stakes, perfect. It's really fucking fun. Like, it's just fun. I don't associate that sort of thing. Kevin Smith is extremely straight and probably couldn't bring that camp energy to something that he was working on.
Interjection, Kevin Smith named his daughter Harley Quinn after Batman's character. So, I mean,
you ever see Jay and Silent Bob's super groovy cartoon movie? Because I fucking have.
Is that the one where the bear's driving the car?
No, that's the Clerks cartoon. Anyway, that's the Clerks cartoon, which is written by Seinfeld writers back in the early 2000s.
Okay.
Jay and Silent Bob's super groovy cartoon movie. On my top five absolute worst things I've ever sat through. Absolute worst.
That means a lot because we know Zach watches a lot of stuff.
I do watch a lot of stuff. So
of questionable quality.
Yeah, I do indeed. So it is. Well, it's upsetting to even think about it, but.
Is your heart broken?
No. Not at all. Not at all. I don't give a shit. Like, whatever. If it's bad, it's bad. They can't take the original. That's always my attitude. You can't take the original away from me. So whatever you've got here, all right. If I don't like it, I won't watch it. But I have the entire original He-Man series on DVD. You can't take those. So
you can't take my physical media.
Can't take that. So, I just don't like what it just seems like a poor creative choice. It just doesn't seem like a good creative choice. But I'm interested to see what they're going to do with it. But I don't have high hopes.
And they've got Powerhouse Animation behind it, who are the same people who did Castlevania.
So,
which,
sure. Now, here's my question. Is this anime?
No. Did I answer too quickly? Did I pause like I was thinking about it? This is an anime. There's nothing about it that's anime. This is all right. So I'm about to go off. So
please.
Powerhouse Animation, I think they're trying to rebrand it as like an anime studio because as we talked about earlier, the Invader Zim show is not branded as an anime on Netflix.
Which is strange. Considering
it's an animated cartoon on Netflix, and apparently this word anime doesn't actually mean anything anymore. I think it's something they're trying to do specifically to rebrand Powerhouse Animation. They'll probably, you know, put some kind of aesthetic in it to make it vaguely look like anime to fit that. But this isn't, it's not anime. No, it's not directed by a Japanese person. It's not animated by a Japanese studio. It's not based on a Japanese property. There's as far, there's nothing about Japan that has anything to do with this show.
It's fucking He-Man.
It's He-Man.
Well, that's not anime. Like,
no.
Anime is shorthand for animation from Japan. Like,
we get co-productions every once in a while. Like,
but it's a loan word, right?
Yeah, it's right. A loan word that we've taken into the English vernacular to specifically refer to animation that originates from Japan. This isn't any of that. And
the Kevin Smith,
the person who sat through the like nearly 2-hour Netflix anime panel at AX, most of the stuff they showed there is also not anime. It's not. It's okay to call it a cartoon.
Yeah.
I watch cartoons. I like them. It's okay.
Who doesn't love cartoons?
It's not a lesser form of the medium to not try and pretend that it's Japanese. Like, stop.
Yeah. Yeah. This is some sort of fucking branding initiative that I just can't. Whoever their marketing executives are, you're getting the double flip off from me. Like, this is not anime. Like,
who are they trying to sell it to exactly is what I want to know. Because, I mean, we
watched I have no idea. I don't want that.
Stinking pile of shit documentary, so they don't understand the people who are interested in that.
Yeah.
Who is this for? Do you even know? Do they know? I don't think they know. I mean, I know who He-Man is for, but He-Man the anime, who's that for?
Gen X.
Is it because of She-Ra? Is it kind of because of She-Ra?
I think so. But She-Ra is not being branded as anime, so...
Is that because it's a DreamWorks thing?
I don't fucking know. Who knows what their marketing... Who knows the secrets of their marketing department? But...
they don't even release the numbers from
The Kevin Smith He-Man is not fucking anime.
Yeah.
It's like that scene in Sideways where he goes, "I'm not drinking any fucking Merlot." That's how I kind of feel about this. Making anime.
View from the inside here, like that lead, the He-Man anime series lead was sent over to me from Interest because news passed on it. And they're like, "Here." And I'm like, "I'm not fucking writing this. It doesn't have anything to do with my website."
It says anime,
but it's a lie.
But it means
I get so I'm not buying it. They can send it over somewhere else.
But it means I get
anime if they want to. No.
At the same time, if they're going to call that anime, that means I get to talk about Skeletor on Anime News Network.
Yeah, right. But they can hire Skeletor to like host a day on Anime News Network.
Yeah,
the content is in Skeletor's voice.
Yeah. Boy, I would love that.
That would be hilarious.
Let me tell you about my Masters of the Universe collection.
Actually, Netflix, ignore everything I said earlier. Please give us money so we can do a Skeletor day.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
Yeah.
I didn't mean it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation here. So... This dovetails with today's anime discussion, which is the show Cannon Busters, which is by LaShawn Thomas, who worked on, I believe, The Boondocks and a bunch of other shit. He has been trying to get this made for as long as I can remember. He's been talking about Cannon Busters and like what it could be. So he finally got to make it. He made it. It's out. Lindsay, what did you think of the show? Well, first, what is the show Cannon Busters about?
Cannon Busters is a sci-fi fantasy series based on a graphic novel series by LaShawn Thomas and animated by Japanese studio Satellite, with lots and lots of visual influence by Thomas Romain, who's a French mechanical designer background artist. And it stars Sam, who is a very friendly robot with superpowers. When she gets mad, her tag-along friend, another robot named Casey, who likes to fix up stuff. And they meet Philly the Kid, who is a misogynist, outlaw, who can't die because of a sorcerer's curse. So every time he technically dies, he gets a tattoo of a number on his skin. And together, the three of them are going to head to a keep, where the prince of a nation is currently hiding. It's like a safe house because his nation was under attack. He's Sam's best friend. Oh, there's a car that runs like an arcade machine and can turn into a bull mecha. They drive that.
Right.
Whole thing, right?
So
I get it?
What did you think of Cannon Busters?
I like everything that Thomas Romaine did in Cannon Busters.
Good. That's a good answer. I did not like this show. I found it almost... the main character is so fucking terrible that I found myself... Like, he's just an... Like, just a piece of shit. Like, just an asshole. And...
Yeah. No redeeming qualities whatsoever.
Deeply...
He's got, like, a cool gimmick. He's got a cool gimmick. But, I mean, like, in the second or third episode, like, he tries to... He gets handsy with female characters. And, yeah. I mean, yeah.
But it's presented as, like, swagger. And it's like, no.
It's so uncomfortable.
No. Like, watch the movie Good Boys for a lesson on how you're supposed... Like, come on. Like... Yeah, I thought it was like, what the fuck are you doing with this? It's like, hey, what if Vash the Stampede were an enormous piece of shit? That's what the show is like. Like,
and it's like a delicate line, right? So like Dandy from Space Dandy was a womanizing kind of piece of shit, but he was presented as like a total doofus. So it was he wasn't threatening, and he was stupid enough that you could laugh at him. Like, it seemed like the show was always, you know, he was the butt of the joke a lot of the time. You
weren't
necessarily supposed to root for him. But with Philly...
This is upsetting me, by the way, because my cat's name is Philly.
I know. I feel they did your cat wrong, you know? With Philly the kid, he's not presented in the same light. So he's just uncomfortable.
Like, it's uncomfortable.
The whole time I was watching it, I was like, I wish they'd get rid of him, because I'd watch it with Sam and Casey, even with this sort of like by the book plot that they're going through the whole time. I at least enjoyed Sam and Casey more, like, enough that I found it easier to sit through, or would have found it easier to sit through if he wasn't there. Like, he was a drag in pretty much every scene that he was in.
Yeah, and he's in most of the scenes. So, like, yeah, fuck that. Like, I don't know. It turned me off. I didn't finish it. I shut it off. I was like, no more of this. No.
I watched half of it, and then I also read the review that we have up on it.
Yep, so
I know it doesn't have an ending based on the review we have up on the site. Like, they don't tie everything up at the end, I guess.
The screenwriting is, all right. The show looks great. Looks great. Tom Romaine is such a talented designer, and the animation is really, really nice. It looks fantastic. And LaShawn Thomas is a talented director, so he knows where to put the camera. It looks good. But the screenwriting is so fucking weak that I wasn't okay with it. I was like, this is a waste of my fucking time.
Yeah, I kept expecting it to be way snappier. You know, it never got there.
It wasn't
particularly snappy. It's not funny most of the time.
Nope.
I mean, it's got a lot of ideas that I like. I like the car that turns into the mecha that has a arcade interface. I liked the idea of the arcade interface. Maybe not necessarily it turning into a bull, but I still liked the arcade interface.
Yeah, of course it has a lot of cool ideas. Like, LaShawn's a really creative guy. Just the sensibility that he brought to this, I think... I don't know. I don't dive with... look, not everything has to be for me. I understand that. I just didn't jive with it. Like, no.
Yeah.
I'm not... No. This character is toxic. Like, this is awful. Like, and also, once again, the screenwriting is quite poor. So...
There's a lot of tonal problems.
A lot of tone problems. It's not very interesting. It's kind of... kind of boring for a little while, especially if you've seen anime before or if you've watched the show.
And that's especially disappointing. So this is mostly like what could have been a buddy road trip, right?
Yeah, that would have been so much better.
Road trip approach, in a fantasy setting that would have been fun, of them going to different locales, like when they got to the big shop town, or, you know, when things like that. But
could have been,
but it wasn't. And then there's these weird tonal shifts, like they get caught up by a serial killer family that I was not interested in.
That's a thumbs.
A serial killer family for a couple episodes where, like, the matriarch skins people and it makes leather. And so there's a scene where they've got all these skinned human corpses, like, hanging inside of a warehouse. they showed you a bride and a groom talks like three different times just to try and like, I don't know, make you really know that it was really sad that they killed someone on their wedding day, I guess. Like they kept going back to that shot. So that's going on with Philly the kid. And at the same time, they quarantine off the powerful robot characters by putting them in a hole for two episodes that they can't figure out how to get out of.
Yep.
And I was just like, what is
this script?
What is this script?
The problem is not with anything other than the script.
Yeah.
You know, and I have no idea how much LaShawn Thomas is actually responsible for that script. I have no idea. But it is not good. Not good.
No.
I would say thumbs down. Do not recommend. Go to the movies and see Ready or Not instead. Or watch Invader Zim.
Watch Invader Zim.
A Netflix original anime.
You don't want to get me started on that again. I already.
Well, I honestly don't have much else to say about it other than like don't bother.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sure, if you want, but like for a really long time.
Because it was a crowdfund project initially, right?
Initially it was, yes. It is not good.
Mm-hmm.
If they crowdfunded this and then this is what they made.
The crowdfund, I think, was for the pilot,
which
I haven't seen.
Yeah, it was. They made that pilot a little while ago. It was I think that's on Crunchyroll. Maybe it's not still there. But yeah. Whew. not a good thing. Skip it.
I mean, I guess it's disappointing because the setting is good. Again, this is just me just really liking Thomas Romaine's aesthetic. I really liked the kingdom and some of the character designs I like. There's a lady, this is 100% like Thomas Romaine territory. There's a lady who her arms are like detached from her shoulders, which is like with these like glowing orb things. And I've seen Romaine do that kind of thing with some characters for his Father and Son's Workshop, which is like an art book you can buy. That's
right.
Kind of cool.
Yeah. He's an incredible artist.
Yeah. So I just wish it was funnier. And I wish I didn't hate Philly, the kid.
Not my cat.
Not the cat. Just the kid.
Okay. I think that about sums it up. All right. I think that does it for this week. Next week we have,
Fushigi Yugi, don't we?
Fushigi Yugi. Yeah, it's coming.
That ending theme song has been stuck in my head for days now at this point. It's just da 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 da.
That's the opening thing.
You're right.
Get it right, Lindsay.
Da-da-da-da.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks.
We'll see you next time.
See you later.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Lindsay for stopping on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, all that stuff. Leave us comments, you know, whatever. Anyway, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next week.